This is RV on Business.
Welcome to 101.9 High FM. It is 9 minutes past 11. I'm getting used to saying 11 and not 12. And thank you so much for joining us at this new time slot. Today, we have, I think, most of the answers to the conundrums and the questions that so many business owners face on a daily basis. So often you hear the expression like, no, we're just idling. We're not really making money. We're just idling. We're just getting by. Why? Because I spend my day putting out fires. And having been a CFO myself for many years, you begin to realize that a lot of that panic comes from the way a company is managed. A lot of that discipline as to how things run on a daily basis come from right at the top, and that filters through to the bottom. You know, today we work with some very big listed companies, and I'm often shocked at how thin the top layer of management is. Maybe it's just one or two or even three people deep, and that's it. From there, it goes operational onto the ground. And you'll often hear in well-run companies, somebody's sitting right at the top saying, well, I can't make that decision. You need to speak to the person responsible for what's happening on the ground. If they're not certain or they don't want to make the call on their own, they'll be in touch with me and we'll bounce it off each other. And that just shows the depth and the health of a company. Today, I'm very honored to have Graham Mitchell, who is the founder of a company called GrowZA. That's their website, grow-za.com. Which is a management company that really coaches companies in growing. Huge amount of experience, billions and billions of rands of turnover that have been through their hands in the companies that they've coached. Graham, welcome to High FM.
Good morning, Avi. Thank you. And good morning to your listeners.
Great. Graham, let's jump straight into it. The long and the short of it is that management in a company and the sort of feeling that you get when you walk into a business is really what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. You can pick up the culture of the business very quickly when you walk into a business. And particularly as you were mentioning earlier, where there's a lot of firefighting going on. You'll see people are stressed, they're anxious. And that's never a good place to be in a business where that level of stress and anxiety is running through the business.
You know, Graham, I was in South Africa in November last year. I come in quite regularly, but I was sitting in a particular company that was doing some work for us. And the order was a mess, just couldn't get it sorted out properly. And then a guy came in and I could see by the way that he was dressed and the authority that he walked into the reception with. But within seconds, you could see the panic running around. And I thought, this is where it comes from. This guy's, you know, battling to hold everything together. Mm. And that's why my particular order is a mess. And yet 2 months down the line, the person that dealt with it is no longer there. There's a new person. We're back to the drawing board, which is maybe a good thing. They got out the dead wood, so to speak. But again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, you go into certain companies that are multi-billion and the receptions are calm and the CEO walks in and there's just this stamp of authority and confidence as to how things run. How prevalent is it in South Africa that we have senior management that's not really qualified in their positions?
So I think it's a real challenge, Abby, particularly in founder-led businesses, where the founder of that business had a certain skill set, perhaps a particular idea, and they've gone out and established this business. And so what you typically see in the sort of journey that they undergo is, one, the business at a point in its earlier stage was very dependent on the founder and their brilliance to create a product, to go out and sell that product. And what happens is the business grows, and at a point that founder's brilliance can't sustain the ever-increasing size of the business. And at that point, the leadership of the business has to change. The leadership has to change from being the person who can do the critical things to make that business successful to a leader who's going to build a team that can do the things that will continue the business success. And that transition can be very tricky for the founder. So their natural inclination is to get things done, and that's why the business has been successful. And so it's interesting the observations you made on the company that you were working with in November is, yes, they will arrive in the room, direct a lot of activity. And what happens often in these situations is the team becomes stressed because they're reliant on the founder, the leader, to tell them what to do. They don't like making decisions without that direction. And that then creates increasing frustration for the founder because they want them to make the decisions and do the things they need to do. And so there's this need to shift your leadership. What's worked to allow the business to grow to a point doesn't sustain it after a certain point. And there's this need for the leadership to change.
We've seen it with many South African founder-led companies where the founder and his team were like the spirit, the energy, and everybody, knew it was synonymous, the founding CEO and the company. But as time goes on, that CEO sort of transitions into a more senior oversight role and more junior people sort of come in and fill that void. What I found interesting to observe, and I know this is an aside issue, is that the CEO tend to have a certain charisma. And the person coming in is the most competent person around, but has a different charisma. And it might take even years for people to get used to this character who's really good at what he or she does, but understanding that they're not the same people and the charisma is different and they've got to learn to work with a different person.
Yeah, absolutely. And often they find it frustrating. And, I sometimes joke with my clients because they get frustrated with members of their team. Why don't they do it the way I do it? And then I always say to them, well, if they did it exactly the way you did it, they wouldn't be working for you. They would have started and been running this business. And so, yes, it is a shift to recognize that in building a team, one, everyone is different and you need to lead and manage them differently. And that you're hiring them for a special set of skills, which ideally you don't have or you need, and you've got to give them the room to apply their knowledge and wisdom in the business. And that, is part of this leadership shift that needs to take place and can be very difficult because, with entrepreneurs, if they've built a successful business, it's happened because they had a particular view of the world that they believe to be true. i.e. it could be done better or there's a different way of doing something. They've gone out and proved it to be true because they've built a successful business. And so they have a high level of confidence that their view and belief of the world is correct. And their ability then to shift and go, well, actually, there could be other views or other skill sets that are different from me can be quite a tricky shift.
When it comes to a CEO, or a founder group of people understanding the limitations or their shortcomings. We've seen that with Steve Jobs. We've seen it with so many top people where they sort of were pushed out of their own enterprise. And yet we've seen some South African examples. The one that comes to mind, for example, is Discovery, where Adrian Gore and his core team are still in place. Maybe things have changed on the health side. But there's still the core is there. But if you look at actually who's the face when you look at presentations, for example, it's not that core group of people anymore. But yet they're very, very much hands-on. What does it take for a person to realize that they might be, number one, the Achilles heel in the growth? And number two, how do they stay relevant without getting sort of bought out of their own baby that they created?
Yeah, so I think the starting point is to be self-aware and be willing to look at yourself as a leader and to recognize that for your business to grow, you're going to need to grow as a leader. And so that to me is really the starting point, is that realization that as your business grows, you're going to have to grow. And if the leader is prepared to sort of acknowledge that as a starting point, that's a great place to be, because that opens the opportunity for the leader to examine themselves. The second part is to then get feedback. And often for leaders, it's not always a fun thing to get feedback, because often they have blind spots, and so therefore they're not aware. And those blind spots may be causing problems in their business. And so that, you know, they're often unaware of. So feedback is really important. And then for the leader to take the feedback on board and do something with it. We've seen this with leaders where they get the feedback, often don't like it, but they sort of dismiss it. And that's not helpful. And once you've taken that feedback on board, you can do something with it. One, you could start working to grow and develop as a leader. Or, you know, it's not an incorrect decision for certain leaders to bring in other leaders who may be better suited for a growth stage in a business. But at least they're doing that consciously versus trying to keep going and then get pushed out.
Graham, we're up against the clock. We're already a minute late for the break. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to discuss the book that you've brought out and why a paper-based book and not something else in this day and age. I love books. I love bookshelves and I love holding it. But I was just wondering what your thought behind it was at. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. It is 23 minutes past 11. And just to let you know that the Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage your health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as your blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offers you a broad range of health screening. These services include female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics inside your closest Dis-Chem pharmacy. Better health starts here. On the line with me is Graham Mitchell, who's the founder of GrowZA, which is a management company that helps companies grow. Graham, you've launched a book. Just give us a bit of a background and why you thought of putting it down, you know, all this experience between two hardcovers.
So the book has been 15 years in the making, not that I've been writing it for 15 years, but you know, I've had the privilege to work with some super leaders, to observe, to test, to learn. And over this period of 15 years, you know, I've had the fortunate position to see what works and doesn't work in growing businesses and the leadership in doing that. And so I felt it would be good to put that down in a book. And I deliberately kept the book to be shorter and not too long. So it make it an easy read. But I felt it would be good to get the message out in terms of what I've learned and seen with the businesses that I've worked. And that was the reason behind the book.
And how's it going?
Yeah, very well. The official launch is on Thursday evening. We've had some good pre-sales and some good feedback from some of the early copies that have gone out. So that's been very encouraging, the feedback so far. And yeah, we're looking forward to obviously a successful launch on Thursday.
Graham, where's the launch going to be?
So it's at the Trist venue in Cromerville. So that's where the actual launch is going to be. And then, yeah, the book is available at Exclusive Books online and then in a few of their stores. And also the Kindle version is available on Amazon.
Fantastic. Please just remind us the name of the book so people can look it up.
So the book is Compounding Advantage, How Small Steps Build Big Businesses.
Fantastic. And that's, and the Kindle is there, and it's also ad exclusive. Okay.
Yes.
The questions are flying in, but they're very similar to the questions that I've already got down. And one of the things that I wanted to discuss with you was this putting out a fire story. Mm. It's all good and well for a management team to say, you know, we're very good at solving problems. But are major problems that are considered fires that need to be put out part and parcel of running a business? Or is it maybe a barometer that something's not totally healthy if it's a continuous process?
Yes. So if it's a continuous process, it usually is a very good indication that something is not healthy. I mean, fires will happen from time to time. I mean, maybe a key employee leaves and there could be a bit of a disruption. But if it's continual, then it does indicate a problem. And typically that problem, you know, sits within either the systems and the processes that are in the business or the people that have been hired to run those processes and systems. The challenge with the fires is often management teams try and fix the fires because obviously you've got to put it out. So you've got an unhappy customer or a drop ball. And so, yes, you do need to go and address that problem, but they don't take the time to dig deep and identify what is the root cause and then commit to fixing that particular cause or challenge. The second thing we see a lot with businesses as they grow is often the approach to fixing the problem is wrong. And so entrepreneurial businesses and often, you know, even established businesses, the natural approach is to try and, you know, work out what's going on and then solve it with your own ideas. Versus going, well, our sales function isn't working or our finance function isn't working, and going, well, what is best or good practice in that area and finding the right person to get that implemented in the business. And many management teams don't default to that option. They just try to fix it based on their own experience and often don't have that.
And, you know, sometimes it's also about the people that you bring in. Mm-hmm. You know, a solution might work for a company, but it doesn't work for the next. I'm just a very small practical example where I'm sitting right now. And my son, who's very involved in high tech and everything, came in and looked at all my screens and looked at a spreadsheet and said, that's a live spreadsheet that people have to manually update all the time. I said, yeah. He said, well, don't you have a CRM that they can just call and automatically? I said, yes, there are such systems, but you've got to understand that there's the POPI Act. And there's certain things, and clients' information needs to be protected. And sometimes the long, short way is the best way, where it's updated, it takes a little bit longer, but I don't have a worry about clients' information being leaked where it shouldn't go. One thing that you've said that I found absolutely fascinating is that constant wins and setting targets per quarter and focusing on smaller, achievable targets is far more practical and yields better results than this wham-bam massive drive that can often derail you. Just unpack that thought for us a little bit.
Yes, Abhi, and it's probably the key or most important observation I've had over the last 15 years. You know, working with clients and seeing the results that they've achieved. And the clients that achieve the best results are the ones that choose a few of the right priorities every quarter, execute on them exceptionally well, and then repeat that quarter after quarter. And I mean, if you do that and you're incrementally better every quarter, it's very difficult not to get great results. And what I've been able to see is that other teams or leadership teams are weak at execution. And so, yeah, they'll get back at the end of the quarter and it's been busy and they didn't really get what they needed to do done. And then they push it out to the next quarter, and before they know it's a year and they haven't really made a lot of progress. And so that consistent improvement absolutely yields the best results. And it does need to be focused, because what some teams like to do is they go, well, we want to do 50 things in the next 3 months. And then they try to do all 50, don't finish half of them. And the half that they do finish is at a very mediocre standard, versus choosing one or two things, doing them brilliantly well, unlocking the benefit to the business, using those benefits to reinvest it in the next improvement. And that's really where the principle of compounding advantage comes from, is that if you do that in business, it has the same effect as investing your money. You know, if you invest today and you let it compound, the impact over a long period of time is significant. And we see the same effect with incremental, consistent improvements in businesses.
Brad, would it not be, would the corollary not be also correct that if you've gone down a certain road, no matter how much time or effort you've put into it, if you feel or see that it's not working, one needs to make a call and rather stop than continue and trying to fix it as you're going along? Mm. I always remember the story about Richard Branson, who sold the Virgin Records, and he told a story that it was his baby. He created this company, but he needed the cash to start Virgin Air. And he was running down Broadway, just crying like a madman. And he saw on the ticker tape that he sold records. He's like, I know I did. It was me. And he said it was so impersonal. It was so cold. But it was a decision that had to be made. How difficult is it for founder CEOs to make that decision at times?
It's very difficult, Abby. And I think there's two things to manage that as best as you can, because it's never going to be an easy decision. The first one is to take the time to choose the right things to focus on. So a lot of businesses jump into things with not enough thought and then go down the road. And actually, if they'd really thought through it up front, they might have avoided all of that heartache. The second part is to be brilliantly good at your execution. Because if you're going to go and, let's say, enter a new market and you go in and do it brilliantly well, one is you'll get to results or no results faster. So you would have wasted less time. And also it makes the decision easier, because what I often see businesses getting stuck with is they've got a strategy, let's say enter a new market. They go and do that, but they do it at a mediocre level. You know, they never quite got the sales team employed and the marketing was a bit sort of miss and hit. And so then they left in the worst trap. Is it the wrong strategy, i.e. we should exit? Or did we just execute poorly on the right strategy? And if we did it better, we would get a result. And when companies land up in that gray zone, it's an awful place to be. And so execution's really critical, because if you've executed well and you know you've executed well, the chances are then the answer is obvious.
Graham, I've got one or two CEOs coming in talking about their boards. But just on the point that you're talking about now, I remember once hearing, I can't remember who it was from, but saying that they have launched many products into market, and a product is never 100% ready to go to market. It's always slightly underbaked, because if you wait for it to be 100% ready, that day is never going to come. It comes to a point where you just have to jump off the diving board. But where's that watershed moment where you know that it's underbaked but still edible and we can deal with it? Or no, we're getting into market too quickly. And I've seen it in our industry, in my industry, in the insurance industry, where stuff comes out and it's a bit of a disaster. And I'm actually surprised that it survives long enough to become brilliant. But it's often launched a little bit underbaked.
So often if it's really going to work, then even if it's a little underbaked, there's still traction, because the need or the desire for it is high enough that you can get away with it being a bit rough. But if it's there's very little traction, then that might already be an indicator that, you know, your assumptions around the market or the demand were incorrect.
Yeah, and that's really what it's about. As you said, it's about making decisions. Just before we wrap up, as we said, Craig's putting a bit of pressure on us. The comment that I'm getting from this particular CEO obviously doesn't give his name or his company. He says one of his biggest challenges, I'm assuming it's a male, is he's bored with ridiculous targets and unachievable goals. And it's a brilliant business, but the board itself is self-destructing. Is that something that we see around in South African businesses?
Yes, so it does happen. And I think it's a challenge, I mean, exactly what he's experiencing, where goals are set that are not based in any reality. And, you know, goals should ideally be set based on building up what are the assumptions. And those assumptions need to have some basis or reality to them. Because, yes, it's easy just to throw out, we want to grow 30% or 50% next year. But if the market's not growing and, you know, you don't have a competitive advantage, you know, you can wish that all you want. It's not going to happen. And yeah, certainly, commiserate with that particular individual. He's in a tough position with his board.
But what he should do is he should go to grow-za.com, be in touch with you, get you guys in and help develop a strategy. I'm looking at your website. I love it. It's clean, it's neat, and it's straightforward. Beautiful drop downs where you can go and find everything that you need. I'm certainly going to ask Annie Hodes if she wouldn't mind giving me a copy of your book, and I'll pick it up from her office when I'm in South Africa in the next couple of weeks. But Graham, thank you so much for your time and thanks for sharing your knowledge.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Avi.
Pleasure. Great. Craig, thanks for pushing the buttons. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll speak to you next week.